Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined again by Phil Oakley. How are you doing, Phil?
Very good, thank you, John.
Excellent, excellent. What have you been writing about this week? We're gonna just talk companies this week again, which is good.
Yeah.
I know you love talking about companies.
Yeah.
There's lots to talk about this week. Where should we start?
I read a piece in the magazine about WH Smith's travel business.
Okay, so there's a theme then.
Yeah, the theme
this week is travel.
Yeah.
The travel, because we're going to talk about EasyJet as well.
We are.
We're going to talk about On the Beach. And we're going to talk about Aston Martin, which is a kind of travel.
Indeed.
Albeit a very expensive kind of travel. Let's start then with WH Smith. You get to the airport. You realise you get through customs. You've had to throw your water away. You're thirsty. You've left your book at home.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
WH Smith.
So what I did with this is I sort of parked the high street side of it to one side.
Which is good, because the high street side of it is horrific as a shopping experience.
Yeah.
The original cover line we had for this was The State of WH Smith, which Rosie had written, which I said, because I think she was referring to the high street business, because everyone's experience of that is it's kind of run down. They're not really investing in it. It's not really the future of WH Smith.
Well, I think a lot of people are very surprised that it hasn't gone bust. You know, those that don't look at numbers and results like you and I do and lots of others do, they scratch their heads about WH Smith.
Because they experience the high street business.
Yeah.
Which is a horrible shopping experience. But the travel business is very, very strong. Yeah. And this is perhaps underestimated by the market.
Yeah, this is what has made the shares actually been a pretty good investment over the last few years. And they have done an extremely good job running it. And they've got a lot of things in their favour. You know, as you alluded to a couple of minutes ago in your introduction, you know, you get through the barriers at the airport. And most of this is airports now. Probably about half the business in terms of stores, just under half is airports. An increasing number of those airports are overseas. The rest is train stations, railway stations, motorway service stations, hospitals, all places where you have captive customers.
Yep.
Usually not huge amounts of competition, bit of competition, but not huge amounts of competition. This allows you to charge higher prices.
Yeah, the price of a chocolate bar in a WH Smith's train station outlet is quite substantially higher than the price of a chocolate bar in, say, a Tesco petrol station.
Yeah, and we had the conversation, you know, off air about, you know, like the meal, my sort of meal deal experience in Alicante Airport last spring, which was like €9, and you could have probably picked up the same one in the UK for £3 or £4. And I'm quite sympathetic to the view of, you know, that this is a little bit too much, shall we say. But people are on holiday, they are they're probably more free and easy with their money, needs must, and they're there. And They do very well.
Having said that, WH Smith has faced some criticism about the price it charges, particularly in hospitals.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of seen as gouging.
As I say, I'm sympathetic to this. I mean, last week I wrote about high margins being a sign of danger. And when I was going through this and looking at this and looking at the margins that WH Smith is making, particularly in the UK, because you can get into the numbers here and you can work out what the UK business and what the overseas business is making. And the UK travel business is making margins of 17%. 17% for selling bars of chocolate, bottles of water, magazines.
I mean, their costs they keep very low, so you don't see many staff in a WH Smith these days.
The cost per square foot in an airport, it's pretty expensive.
You mean for the real estate?
For the concession, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's turnover-based rent as well. So you're giving away a percentage of your margin away to the landlord.
But in terms of other costs, it's very lean. Very lean.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, just in my experiences of walking around airports and so on, a lot of self-service tills have been put into these businesses to get customers in and out quickly. And that is one of the skills. But going back to your hospital comment, you know, I look at, I have to say, the more and more I look at high margin businesses now, I just start thinking, how long can this last? What can take this away? There's a very fine line between something that is a really great business and something which is just an unsustainable gouging.
But, I mean, what sort of proportion of WH Smith's essentially travel business is hospitals?
Yeah, so there's about 560 or in the UK, and about 150 of those are airports. And then this year, hospitals have actually become the next biggest, probably get to sort of the mid-130s.
Mm.
And then you've got sort of 125, 130 equally in railway stations and service stations. And the service station business is a franchise business. And then the rest is in places like bus stations, few workplaces, that kind of thing. And the hospitals have been doing very well for them.
Oh, I bet they have.
But, you know, what stops this happening? I mean, you know, the landlord does very well out of these things because the landlord is generally taking a chunk of turnover.
Well, I guess given that the NHS needs every penny it can get, it's not going to turn its nose up at a few quid from a WH Smith's concession.
And nor will Network Rail or airports.
Indeed. And given the political shambles that we're seeing in the UK, I would imagine dealing with the price of chocolate bars in a hospital is quite far down the list of things that politicians are going to be paying attention to.
Yeah, but you can always bring your own with you.
That's true.
I mean, not water. You know, but
bring a bottle of water. But
I think one thing that's interesting, though, you look at the margins, and the margins in the UK business are double those that are being earned in the overseas airports business. And you know, maybe the UK is a bit of a special situation. Do I think that the overseas airports business can get to 17% margin? I'm not sure, because if you look at...
Where are those overseas concessions?
Yeah, so you've got essentially, you've got about 280, 285, and about 80 of them in Europe, and then the rest are sort of equally spread, sort of South America, and also big push into Asia, Australasia, Southeast Asia. And then, obviously, at the end of November, they bought a technology airports concessions business in the United States with about 140 stores. So about 114 stores.
Is that their first big push into the US?
Well, they did have a business in the US about 15, 16 years ago, and they sold out of it.
Yeah, but I mean,
it wasn't the kind of scale that they've got now. So this is the sort of big push into the American airports and concessions business.
And airport retail has changed considerably in the last 15 years. I mean, the last time I went through Stansted, it was very different to the first time I went through Stansted. It is a shopping experience more than it is an airport these days.
Yeah, I mean, the airport owners have always seen retail as a way to, you know, make more money per passenger. You know, it's an interesting business because, you know, you look at how well WH Smith is doing. I think you've got to hand WH Smith a lot of credit. They seem to have employed a lot of the tactics that they've done in their high street business, which is getting out of unprofitable categories, changing the mix. You know, these guys are smart retailers. This is what comes across here. This is a very smart, very adept retailing company.
I guess a lot of the credit for that transformation went to Kate Swan, and there was a big concern when she left the business, went to SSP, which I think you also mentioned in the piece. But so there were worries that you know, new management wouldn't have quite the impact that Kate Swan did. But they seem to have defied any fears that there were.
They seem to be very good at growing sales, changing the mix, and obviously as this gets bigger, because it's run as a separate business, it's getting a buying power advantage as well. And one of the things that I touch on in the article is how much the gross margin has improved over the last decade. And it's been an amazing cumulative gross margin improvement story as well. And
the numbers you've got in this table, each one of those is an annual improvement in gross margin that have added up to quite a significant number. What 1,320 basis points.
Yeah, 13%.
13.2%.
Yeah. You know, you start scratching your head because you look at some of the other sort of global travel retailers, a Swiss company called Dufry, and then they've got an offshoot, which they've just floated off in America, called Hudson's, who are doing similar. There's much more duty-free in that. You know, probably half of Dufry's business is selling perfume and booze. And they're only making 5%. And he's thinking, wow, you know, WH Smith is making 8, 9% outside the UK. And it's making 17% in the UK. And you just think, you start thinking, what is there something wrong here? And I think I've looked, you know, I tried to sort of kick the tires and think, is this a scam? Is it too good to be true? And I don't think it is. I think they deserve a lot of credit. I think what is going to happen, though, is that clearly the expansion of the business, the growth of this business, is going to come from overseas airports concessions. And I don't think they're going to be able to make the same kind of margins they are in the UK. So you're going to get a different extra additional profit. It's not going to be as big. The extra profit from the growth in terms of margin, the margin mix of the business is going towards lower than it is now.
Do we know how that margin is reached in terms of the product mix that it sells? Is that something we can get into from the accounts?
No.
Yeah, that would be quite interesting.
There's been a big push on things like technology products. So yeah. Things like battery packs, headphones, various gadgets.
What about ready to go food? I mean, you mentioned ready.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I mean,
with like Marks and Spencers and things like that.
So you could probably make a pretty decent margin on that on an airport sandwich.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, that might start to explain some of the differences in the margin mix between the UK and overseas, where it has big established relationships in place on lines such as ready to go food.
Yeah, and I think this is what they've been very good at. I think they've been very good at tailoring their offer to the specific location. So, for example, in the hospitals, you know, they want to be seen to be good operators, healthy sandwiches, lower calorie sandwiches, and that kind of thing. In partnership with Marks and Spencers, that's done very well for them. And you know, maybe in the sort of bigger airports, the big London airports, it might be more tech.
Yeah.
And where the passenger might be waiting around for a lot longer than, say, a short haul travel, they can perhaps tinker that product offering, tinker the staff, tinker the layout of the store.
Well, see a few more books at airport retailers.
Yeah, you've got specialists. There are a few specialist bookstores in there as well.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I look at this, I take a step back and... You know me, if I could find a downer on something, I will. And,
well, that's often the best way to look at a business.
Yeah,
what could go wrong rather than what's right?
I have a lot of admiration for this as a business. You know, the cash generation is good. Yeah, you know, they've got very, very good reputation as well now. And you can see that in the win rate. You know, they're winning a lot of contracts overseas because they have the credibility. And because they're turnover-based rents, the landlord's going to look at these concession operators and say, which one of these operators is going to make me the most money?
So when you say they're winning contracts, they're essentially winning a bid to run a concession in an airport. So so that doesn't. I mean, they've obviously bought this big business big-ish business in the US.
Yeah,
they don't necessarily need to acquire to expand in that case.
It gives them a platform to go into other airports and try and win new concessions.
But they actually have now. They have that platform. They have the kind of the demonstration vehicle for what they can do.
Yes, yes. But obviously, this is not an evergreen business. These concessions tend to last 5 or 10 years, and then you have to re-tender them. But the contract retention rate is extremely good.
Do you like SSP? We talked about Kate Swan.
Yeah,
same sort of thing.
A bit different. It's more food and drink, and. It's spun out of Compass Group.
Oh, yeah, of course it was, yeah.
And, I do like SSP as a business. For similar reasons, it is different in that it is more food-based and it also runs concessions for, you know, brands like Starbucks. So it's, you know, Starbucks obviously is going to be taking a slice of the pie, whereas WH Smith is running its own proprietary brands. Mm. Okay, it's selling Marks and Spencer's sandwiches, but it's not running brands for others. And SSP is a very good business.
Yeah, an interesting model. So,
both have been really good shares to own.
I guess the big question with WH Smith and SSP, but let's stick to WH Smith, where we what we're really talking about. Is there more to go?
Yeah.
Is it still worth buying?
Yeah, I think so. I think this play on the overseas airports market, their share of this market is tiny still. I think they've got a lot of firepower through internal cash generation. The balance sheet, it's got a little bit of debt on it following the InMotion acquisition, but they've got a lot of firepower they can throw at this. So I would expect them to continue to do quite well.
And what do they do with the high street business? Because, I mean, it's...
manage the decline of it. Manage the maturing leases on the portfolio. Get out of stores that are, not doing very well, and just keep on doing what they're doing. I don't think they can keep holding the profits where they are. That, you know, the profits are going to keep going down in that business, in my opinion. But I think they'll get offset by, you know, travel is getting towards 2/3 of the profits now. It's going to get a bigger and bigger chunk. And this will then, if it isn't already, it's going to be viewed more and more as a travel business with much more attractive characteristics. And I think that bodes well. All I would say is it's not recession-proof. You know, clearly we saw... after the financial crisis, you know, airport passengers do go down as well as up. Same with rail passengers, but they've grown the profits every year. Since they demerged this business from the news distribution business, they've grown the profits every year, even through bad times.
And as they become more international, the localised recession risk diminishes. It's the global recession we need to worry about.
Yeah. You know, if air travel, you know, starts going down, then this business will suffer.
Okay, let's talk about air travel. So you've got your sandwich, you've got your water, you've got your magazine.
Yeah.
You want to get on the plane. EasyJet.
Yeah.
Not such a good week.
No, yeah. I think this was a little bit of a surprise.
Well, it's the tip of the year of ours. And everything looked like it was doing really well, actually, towards the end of last year. And the shares actually continued to motor ahead into 2018. But the reversal's been sharp and obviously took another turn for the worse this week. What's going on there?
Too few passengers and too many seats.
Mm.
It's hard. I mean, there's been obviously a lot of distress in this sector. WOW went out of business. We've got Flybe that's hanging on by its fingertips.
Cancelled quite a few flights this week,
didn't it?
Yeah. I'd never heard of WOW, I must admit,
I'd never heard of them either. But we've had that. Monarch has obviously gone. And even Ryanair has been, you know, struggling to grow its profits.
But the rationale for being bullish on EasyJet was the fact that the smaller operators were disappearing and that capacity was being taken out of the market and giving EasyJet the room to grow into.
And it may as well still be a reason to be bullish long term. I think the weakness in passenger demand, certainly in terms of the outlook statement for the peak summer selling season, you know, that's what's shaken. I mean, the shares have come back a bit since Monday, I think, when the sort of profit warning was announced. But they are, you know, they are putting a lot more seats into the market, as are Ryanair. And, you know, you've got to fill these seats without cutting prices. And I think the comment made about the summer and, you know, probably got analysts thinking they're going to have to cut the prices to fill these planes up.
Why are people not booking? I mean, they did. I'm pretty sure I heard the B word mentioned a couple of times to this statement.
The B word's mentioned a lot, and you know, it's not as if the planes aren't going to fly, and you're not going to be able to get through passport control at the other end. But having said that,
but it's enough to make certain people wary.
I think it has made people wary. I think the currency which has been a factor for a couple of years
ago. But it's been flat.
It's been flat for a while. But I think, you know, you look at, it's not just the UK, so you're not just looking at the UK side here, you know, there's a significant European business here. And European economies don't look too well at the moment. And I think this is a sign that, you know, European consumers are perhaps keeping their hands in their pockets.
So I mean, I guess they don't really reveal too much detail about exactly where the weakness is. But you're suggesting that this is
quite a thin statement, actually.
Yeah,
I just thought I'd wanted a bit more detail. That, you know, it was very brief. You know, there wasn't really any detail on load factor or how the holidays business was doing and that kind of thing. And yeah, I'd have liked them to have said a bit more. And I was, yeah, again, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, because we've alluded to here, there are many moving parts here.
Yeah,
potentially.
Fuel as well.
Well, fuel, yeah. Which has become more expensive.
Yeah.
No detail on that. But they're hedged,
but fuel is hurting profits and will continue to do so for a while yet.
Not an unusual thing in the air.
Not an unusual thing, no.
You know, this seems to be more a demand problem than a cost problem. Or is it? I don't know.
I don't know. The oil price has ticked up a bit. But it's an issue. It's an industry issue. You know, Ryanair's got the same issue on fuel.
I'm really intrigued by you suggesting that, you know, I mean, these are pan-European businesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not just UK out to Europe or vice versa. These are EasyJet is flying from European points, cities point to point.
Yeah.
Do you know how the business splits up in that respect?
No. Or,
thanks, Phil. But the detail would be really useful to understand where the demand weakness actually is.
Yeah, obviously I'm not a full-time airline analyst, and I imagine, you know, the information is there to drill down into the, you know, the routes.
Possibly worth a look.
Obviously, they've got the Berlin thing that they've taken on, and that's obviously a drag.
But no detail on that?
Not really. In previous statements, they've actually given the mix. You know, the Berlin airport bit, Tegel, I think it's called, has been dragging down the yield, the passenger yield, the revenue per passenger. And I didn't like this statement. I thought they said very little, and what they did say wasn't very good.
Mm.
And I would worry about this one, in that, again, there was a big caveat in the statement that you expect prices, revenue per passenger to be positive in the second half of the year, and I just think...
Second-half-itis.
Correct. If you've got a lot of seats that you need to put backsides on, you might have to start slashing your fares. And when you start slashing your fares, it rarely works well for profits. And profit forecasts have been hammered on this one.
I haven't booked holiday this year. This sounds good news to me as a consumer.
I'm going EasyJet Monday.
Excellent. No, but I've booked nothing.
No, I have the plane to myself.
Absolutely. Sounds great. No, I've booked nothing. And I just don't know why. I just haven't got round to it. Actually, it's no reason apart from I haven't got round to it.
No, I mean...
And also my kids are doing their GCSEs this year, which is another...
There's some good bargains to be had.
I can't wait. But we might buy from a package operator at the last minute, which brings us very neatly onto our next company for discussion on the beach, which is not one you've written about this week.
Algie's
written about this in the stock screen. Now, on the beach popped out of his genuine value screen, which is a really, it's a proprietary value screen that he's built himself. It's worked very well for a couple of years, although when markets go bad, it goes bad. And in the last quarter of last year, it went bad. This year, it's popped out quite a few companies. I don't know how many there are, quite a few. But at the bottom of this list is a company called On the Beach. And Algie's looked at this company in detail. I don't think he's convinced, is a polite way of putting it.
No, I'm not either.
He's put a very interesting graph here together, looking at the forecast trajectory of On the Beach. And we talk about upgrade cycles, which are things we like.
Yeah.
This is a downgrade cycle.
Well, if EasyJet bookings are weak, On the Beach bookings are going to be weak as well, because they make a lot of their money booking seats on EasyJet planes.
So explain to me the model.
Essentially, it's a it's a travel agent. And it's an internet travel agent.
Been around quite some time.
Yeah.
But not on the market for that long.
No, it's, you know, it's an online, it's heavy investment in IT, and it buys spaces on planes and rooms in hotels.
Packages them up, sells them as a package to an online
with a
customer.
You know, gives the simplicity to the customer, saying, just come on here, a few clicks, your holiday's done.
We have spoken about this company, but in the context of EasyJet. And I think your concern about on the beach was that, well, EasyJet can do this too, and it owns the planes, and it's hardly started in this sort of package holiday side of things.
It's a cutting out the middleman argument.
And on the beach is the middleman.
On the beach is the middleman. You know, it owns the IT. And, you know, yes, it is a source of demand for the airlines and the hotels, no doubt. But, you know, the airlines, it might take a while. It might take a while, but the airlines saying, look, they look at the margins that On the Beach is making, and they're pretty chunky margins. And you know, the risk is that they're going to say, look, I'm going to have some of this.
This goes back to the old high margin argument again.
Well, yeah, you know, high margin for what? You know, if you're making high margin for something that is very difficult for others to do, then you deserve that high margin. If you're doing something that perhaps somebody can come and do themselves, then you might want to mind your eye. And this is a business to me that I struggle to see how, you know, it doesn't own the proprietary assets. It's not like, you know, Thomas Cook or TUI that, you know, they own planes and they own hotels.
Well, they're not exactly having a great time of it.
No, they're not.
I think, actually, Thomas Cook I popped into my head there as one of the big fallers this week. Shares down about 10%.
Yeah, probably on the EasyJet thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just think, you know, what actually are you earning this margin for? Fair play to them. You know, they have seen a market, and they are a play on scale. This is, if we, you know, go back to the magazine article last week, high margin, high volume. If it works, that's the ideal business that you want to be invested in at the right price. And On the Beach is a high margin, high volume business. And when you have a high volume business, the danger is that someone can come along and take some of that margin away and still make reasonable profits because they're selling lots of it.
Yeah.
And EasyJet, Ryanair, I think they're going to want to take more of this market. Interesting that my in-laws went on an EasyJet holiday, actually.
And?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's just the booking process. You know, EasyJet have got all the data. They've got the volume. They have the potential, if they choose to go to these hotels and say, we can buy capacity.
I mean, an interesting point that Algie makes is one of the key costs of On the Beach is marketing.
Yes.
So in fact, the whole travel business is about spending heavily.
Marketing and IT.
Marketing, IT. But marketing is about 37% of 2018 sales, which is a chunky number.
Yeah.
I guess EasyJet, I mean, they presumably spent a fair chunk on marketing but they can get more bang for their buck, presumably, if they have that greater cross-selling opportunity, potentially.
Yes. But, you know, I think the thing that sort of intrigues me with on the beach is it's not difficult to replicate this, particularly if you're an airline and you've got the IT systems and you've got the company data. Mm-hmm. Sorry, the customer data. I'm not convinced by this.
Well, one thing Algie points out here is that they could potentially become a packager of more long haul holidays than they currently are, which obviously EasyJet can't necessarily do.
No, and EasyJet won't go long
haul. And won't go there.
No.
So you know, potentially they can change their business.
All I say is that I've looked at On the Beach from a customer experience, and I've gone on and booked the same holiday through On the Beach as I've done by do it yourself on EasyJet and, you know, a hotel by booking through the, you know, Google and the hotel direct. And I did it cheaper myself than On the Beach.
Yeah. Well, last holiday I did, I think we booked with Flybe at Southend Airport, Stobart Group.
Yeah.
Went to Vienna, booked the hotel directly. Absolutely fine.
Yeah, so I've done it directly.
But people are lazy, though, aren't they, Phil? That's what these companies rely on.
That's it. So it's a play on laziness.
A lot of things are a play on laziness.
A lot of things are a play on laziness. And, you know, fair play. I'm just saying...
This stuff is hard to research as well. It is hard to research. The travel industry is terrible. Purposefully terrible.
Except most of us are customers of it.
Yeah.
And therefore we have, you know, we have the ability to understand a little bit about it. But I just think it's margins. I know the margin is a function of scale and volume, but I think that there's something there to be shot at with this company.
Mm, indeed. Okay, so from budget travel to luxury motors,
yeah.
Aston Martin. You were moaning before we got in here, Phil.
Was I?
Yeah,
was
you
I
were.
You said, I wasn't moaning.
Moaning?
I was
bemoaning.
No, I was reminding you.
Bemoaning the fact that you hadn't got enough credit
for your splendid
call on Aston Martin. Pre-flotation.
Indeed.
And I think you've got the share. I think you put a valuation together at that point as
well. So what I did was we did quite a detailed piece on this, and we looked at the profits. We looked at how some of its financing and accounting was a bit sort of mind your eye. And we shoved it, just put the trailing profits on the same multiple as Ferrari, which in itself was a high multiple. And we got, you know, like a value for the equity of about, I think it was about $2.5 billion, which was worked out at about $11.25 a share. This was back in late August, early September, just before it floated.
Seems you were generous.
And I thought that was a generous multiple to put on it.
It was.
These things got floated away for 17 quid. We're now back at what, 11?
No, 10, no, I think 11? We're less than that. I think we're less than that. We tipped it again. So we formally sold it last... Formally?
Yeah.
As formally as we get in the tip section. Alex Chambois wrote a sell tip on this. He was looking at a very specific accounting detail, which was how they capitalise their development costs.
They are capitalising shed loads of development expenditure.
And it looks pretty...
couple of hundred million. It's cash flow. Look at the cash flows on this. Two things on the cash flow. So it gets customer deposits in advance of delivery because people reserve their Aston Martin. And they capitalise development expenditure on building the new models. And the cash flows look absolutely awful on this. And it's very difficult to have a lot of faith in these kind of businesses, in my opinion, because there's so much moving around in the cash flow statement.
Well, they've had to raise some money.
Oh, well, that's...
they've had to raise some more. They floated not that long ago and have had to raise some money through debt issuance.
At quite high coupon as well.
Yeah, what is it, 6.5%?
Yeah, 6.5% coupon. So I had this debate with somebody on Twitter that I have high regard for. He's an ex-bond trader. And I always think that credit analysts, pretty smart people.
Well, they're the top of the tree, aren't they?
I think they are, yeah.
From you know, as sort of city folklore goes.
I think that's well deserved, I think.
Absolutely.
Some of the best research, actually, I've ever seen has been written by credit agencies, credit investors. So the credit market's saying, I want 6.5%. Credit investors saying, I want 6.5% interest. What's the PE on Aston Martin?
So Numis forecasts 32.5p of earnings. In 2019, the share price is about 10 quid.
Yeah, so it's 30 times.
Yeah,
so an earnings yield of about 3%. So equity investors are getting 3%. Bond investors, they want twice as much.
Having said that, they're pretty much doubling their forecast for the year after, so there's some optimism baked in there.
It's going to double its profits.
57.6p in 2020.
Oh, let's keep our fingers
crossed. I interrupt. So, yeah, earnings yield.
Yeah, so the earnings yield at the moment is, you know, 3%. Bond investors saying they want more than double that. They want 6.5%. And bond investors get paid first, right? So shareholders are going to get paid afterwards. So usually that demands some kind of premium return. And, of course, Aston Martin or the brokers who are pushing Aston Martin say, oh, don't worry, you'll get that return in growth. But having said that, do you watch the Grand Tour?
No.
Right, so the Grand Tour, which is Jeremy Clarkson and his friends on Top Gear.
Like Richard the Hamster Hammond.
That's the one. Last week's programme, I think it was, they actually were driving an Aston Martin DBS.
Yeah, nice cars.
Nice looking car, and it was up against a Bentley, posh Bentley, and a BMW. And it wasn't a very good advertisement for an Aston Martin, put it that way.
Yeah, but it's an Aston Martin. It's a British classic, but then, you know...
Is it British, really? What? If you look at the bits that are in it, come on. I think that's stretching it a bit.
Let's not go there. We said we weren't going to talk about the B word.
They're nice looking cars. I'm not sure about the shares.
And neither are we. We've still got it on a sale. We sold it last week. They're down 4% already. And yeah, this fundraising, so soon after an IPO, it does.
Never buy an IPO is good advice, in my opinion.
Never?
Unless the government's selling.
Oh, yeah.
When the government's selling, fill your boots.
Well, they did sell Royal Mail, and that was...
That did all right for a bit. Yeah, it got sold off very cheaply, but generally speaking, if you are buying an IPO off a private equity seller, turn away, because these guys usually sell out at the top and leave very little for the next man.
Yeah. I mean, Aston Martin... I mean, you put a valuation on them, I think you said that's roughly 11 quid a share.
Yeah.
I mean, how generous was that?
Don't know.
Could it get much worse?
If Newmis forecasts are right, they'll say I'm a bit stingy.
they've got to work hard to get to that number, though.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. And
we've got an economic backdrop
this
is actually not helpful either.
Yeah, this is a company that's got a very checkered past. And, you know, the addressable market out there is not massive.
No.
You know, it's not going to take much to throw forecasts off course here.
Having said that, Ferrari, they do all right. But,
they've actually developed the Ferrari brand, you know, in terms of other merchandise.
Roller coasters in Dubai.
That kind of thing.
Is it Dubai? Bahrain?
I don't know.
It's Bahrain.
But it's,
or is it Abu Dhabi?
They've sort of done very well with that side of the business. Aston Martin would probably like to do the same. Whether it can or not, time will tell.
Yeah, it'd be a very gentle roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Unless you're a shareholder.
Yeah.
In which case, it's been horrific. Enough about Aston Martin. Enough about travel. We've done that theme to death.
We're travel sick now.
We are travel sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, unusually coherent podcast in terms of what we've covered. But
I mean, we could have talked about Hostel World and stuff like that.
Oh, God.
Keep it going.
Oh, but... shall we talk about that? From luxury to budget.
Yeah, go on then.
Go on. We've got 5 minutes.
This has been a bit of a bit of a rough share as well. And
it's certainly a share whose product I doubt I will ever be buying.
Not at your age, no.
No.
Thanks, or mine.
Thanks, Phil.
Your kids might. My kids might.
Oh, God, no. My kids wouldn't. They have expensive tastes. I think they would rather not go on holiday than stay in a hostel.
Yeah, well... I think there's a really good lesson in this for investors, and it's about something called operational gearing, which in layman's terms tells you the impact on profits from a change in sales due to the amount of fixed overhead a company has, fixed costs. And this is a business with a lot of fixed costs. Admittedly, there's a marketing side in there, but if you don't market, you don't have any sales, so you've got to spend marketing money.
So what is it? It owns hostels,
no,
or operates them?
It sells them.
So it's just a middleman.
It's an agent,
right?
And it charges commission on the sales, so it takes a cut of the booking revenue from the hostels, puts that over, you know, marketing cost, IT cost, that kind of thing. And one of the things it's done, which is really interesting this year, is that it has offered more cancellation options in its sales. And it has to account for them differently now. So some of the sales that can get cancelled, it actually can't count as sales. It has to count them as deferred income. And that's seen the profits fall a lot. But even stripping that out, there's not a lot of growth in this business. But the revenues have come down. The costs have stayed the same and the profits have absolutely tanked. You know, the operating profit of the business has come down by over 40%.
Operating margins down 13.7% to 8.2% these results.
Dividends being cut. And this business looks like one that's run out of steam. And it's interesting that the commission rate that they've been charging on bookings has been going up quite a lot. So that's been... That's been taking a bigger bite out of the revenues of the sellers, of their customers. The cancellation bit as well is obviously they have to offer that now to generate the sales. So this looks like a business to me that is struggling, struggling to grow. And the market has taken a similar view. And it just looking at the figures today, I mean, the business is not in bad shape. You know, financially, it's not in bad shape.
Just not a growth business.
Yeah, it's the question of growth, and but it shows what the results show as a lesson for investors is that if you're investing in high fixed cost businesses and the revenue starts to fall, then the impact on your profits, and as we've seen with Hostel World, on the dividends can be very severe.
That dividend cut is pretty savage. And that's something that people don't want to see at all.
Exactly.
Often what they bought the shares for.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, that completes our tour. Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Very nice thematic podcast there. And let me just talk you through what else we've got in the magazine this week. The cover feature is about cycles, something that often gets talked about by analysts in particular, and which never really gets explained properly. So we've tried to do that this week. EasyJet is a very good example of a business that can be described as cyclical, as you said, Phil, because in times of economic weakness, people travel less, which is possibly what we're seeing with this leisure sector right now. Lots in the news section. We've got something on outsourcing. We talked about that recently. Superdry, a very fascinating story there. The founder, Julian Dunkerton, making a very interesting comeback. I think he won his vote by 51% or something.
And the rest of the board walked out.
And the rest of the board walked out. Yeah. So, very resounding victory there for Julian Dunkerton. Rolls-Royce, another business connected to the travel industry, having some trouble again with its engines. Yeah, not been a good time for the aerospace industry in the last few weeks. That's maybe something we'll talk about in future. Results winding down, but there's a few interesting companies in there. Sticking to the travel theme, we have AA. If you're travelling through the motorways of England and stopping off at some of the motorway services, you may have to call upon the AA at some point, but unfortunately,
or you'll get hassled by someone from the AA getting you to sign up.
Indeed. Yep. Not really working though. Still, Time Out, which has expanded into a global travel markets business, and lots of Eddie Slaybart, not really travel,
just movies.
travel yeah, and transport. We've got a really interesting feature in the personal finance and funds section this week, looking at Neil Woodford, who has come under some savage fire recently for the poor performance of his funds. We've got two views on the funds team there. Leonora Walters thinks we should stick with Woodford. Taha Lokhandwala is not convinced, and I'm sure they will discuss that on their podcast tomorrow. And all the usual tips and comments. And by the way, I apologise, John Barron has been otherwise occupied this week. His column will be in the magazine next week. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Pick up the magazine in all good WH Smiths and other newsagents. How to beat boom and bust, why understanding economic cycles can make you a better investor. And we'll be back next week. Thank you.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.